Hello, listeners.
All right.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers Podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board game design, gaming, game design, gaming as a hobby, you know, all the tabletop games, card games, you know.
Yeah, you know.
You know. So this is one of our weekly scheduled episodes.
Yeah, it's pretty hot outside. It's July.
It's July.
That means that we've been doing this show for six months now. I almost said 6 years. That would
six
be completely
months.
Wrong.
No, yeah.
6 months.
6 whole months.
And we figure now's a good time to start talking about expansions.
Well, we
have talked about, like, the base set of every game we've covered.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe very briefly, very, very briefly glancing on an expansion. But expansions are a big part of gaming as a hobby.
Right. And we did kind of a themed month in May, where we talked about some of our favorite games, if you could call that a theme. But it was still more of the same. This is going to be more of an even more themed month for us. This is almost kind of like an expansion of our podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Not really. That's kind of cheesy. But yeah, we're doing a week where we talk about the expansions of games that we've already discussed on this podcast. So if you want, you could pause this episode right now and go back and listen to the original episode where we talk about the base game of the game that we're going to talk about on this episode. And Matthew, what game are we talking about here?
Dominion Intrigue.
Dominion
being the base game.
We are talking about the first expansion for the deck building game Dominion. So what can you tell me about Dominion Intrigue?
So Dominion Intrigue, designed by Donald X. Vaccarino.
Just like Dominion was.
Published in 2009 by Rio Grande Games.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Dominion was.
Well, not in 2009.
No, it was.
Oh, same year? Oh, cool.
According to Board Game Geek, that's what Dominion Intrigue said.
Okay.
And then, fun fact, one thing is that they released a second edition in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed some things around. It clarified some wording for some cards, but it also removed 6 cards and added 7 new ones.
Mm-hmm.
For all intents and purposes, we are going to talk about the original printing.
Yeah.
However, I mean, the base, if you're just looking to play Dominion and buy Dominion, the new version of Dominion Intrigue is very good.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about the original printing, Dominion Intrigue version 1. Today. So let me give you a little bit of a background on Dominion, the card game, and then we'll talk about what Intrigue starts to add to the game. So just to describe, for those of you who aren't familiar with Dominion, it is a deck-building game in which players are leaders of kingdoms attempting to build the most impressive kingdom. Using treasures, players acquire structures and villagers in the form of kingdom cards to add to their deck, all of which enhance your deck's abilities to acquire more cards and remove weak cards from your deck. Along the way, you purchase tracts of land, which are called estates, duchies, and provinces, which are worth victory points. When 3 of the piles of kingdom cards have been bought out, or when all of the provinces have been bought out, then the game ends and players count the number of victory points that they earn from cards in their deck, and the player with the most points wins. So that is Dominion. And Intrigue uses the same rules. It's an expansion, so its parts can be used with the original game's parts. Although it has enough to it that you could play it on its own, technically. We're going to be talking about this game as if it were an expansion, which means that it does exist in the context of the base game. So let's talk a little bit about strategy in Dominion and Dominion Intrigue in particular.
So Dominion, if you're familiar with a lot of deck builders nowadays,
mm-hmm.
one big thing is that the deck builders nowadays tend to have a lot more card draw. And they tend to not have a limit on how many actions you can play per turn or how many cards you can play.
Mm-hmm.
Dominion's sort of big catch throughout its whole history is that actions are a limited resource and probably one of the most important right next to money.
In fact, everything in this game is a limited resource because actions are limited, but so are buying. Your buying capabilities are limited. You can only buy 1 card per turn unless you play cards that allow you to buy more. Mm-hmm. And yes, of course, gold is always a limited resource.
So,
and card draw is I guess it's less scarce in Intrigue, but it's somewhat scarce.
Right. Intrigue does have a fair amount of cards that give you multiple actions.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the notable ones are, of course, Mining Village, which is a... it costs one more than the base set village, but it lets you trash it for two money.
Yes.
So when you play it. There's also, I believe, Shantytown does it, and Steward as well. Or no, Steward doesn't give you actions. There is Nobles, which is one of the hybrid cards from the set.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you... So yeah, there's a lot of ways you can get multiple actions, which makes it easier and more rewarding to play the terminal actions, which don't give you any actions to replace them, so those are usually, like, the end of the line.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Dominion Intrigue has a more variations on trashing and junking.
Mm-hmm.
Trashing being, you know, removing cards from your deck permanently. Junking being giving your opponent bad cards. One of the most notable ones is Swindler. It's a 3-mana action. It gives you two money.
$3 action
gives you two money, and I believe it is, yeah, each other player trashes the top card of their deck and gains a card with the same cost that you choose.
Mm-hmm.
The notable interaction is if they trash a copper, you can give them a curse. Which gotcha. Just takes a bad card and makes it even worse.
Mm-hmm. That rhymes.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was funny.
That was good.
And there's also, like, Masquerade, which lets you draw cards, and then each player passes a card from their hand to the left.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but then you, playing the Masquerade, get to discard the card that you were given.
You get to trash the card,
that you were given. So everybody else gets a bad card from their neighbor, except you. You get to get rid of it. Unless yeah. it was a good card, then you get to keep it.
Generally, I like this because, well, for one thing, like, Swindler is just a cool card with cool interactions and good decision-making. Masquerade is a good early card trasher, which is still a big deal in Dominion.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one thing in Dominion Intrigue is the card Trading Post. I believe that's in this set.
Yep.
Yeah, which is trash two cards from your hand, gain a silver card to your hand. It costs 5, which means that it's, you know, only, like, half of the hands you're going to have, you know, every time you play the game to start with are going to have 5 cards because it's either 5 and 2 or 3 and 4 copper.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of the best ones in the set. And between this and the base set, it's probably the second best right after Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really good one to try to go for.
So
as always in playing Dominion, it's usually a good idea to try to get a silver in one of your first turns, and then another just reasonable card in the other one, because the most important thing to have is to not only replace your bad cards, but replace them with strictly better cards.
Mm-hmm.
And silver lets you get to that 5 money threshold to get better cards quicker. Right.
So just to sort of break it down into a little bit more broad terms, your strategy in a game of Dominion is to make a deck that can efficiently and consistently buy either the powerful action cards, which cost 5 money, or eventually the provinces, which are the cards worth the most victory points.
Right.
And then along the way, you want to be able to, I mean, while you're building that deck, making it efficient means trashing the bad cards. So you want to acquire cards that can remove them from your deck and from your hand permanently so that you don't draw into them later. Instead, you're just always drawing good cards. So you're building this engine. And so you suggest cards like Trading Post are very good for acquiring or for thinning out your deck so that it becomes this well-oiled machine that every turn can just draw through all the cards in your deck and buy a province.
Right.
And that's like the most important strategy in Dominion is to draw through your deck buy a province.
You want to be able to buy at least one province every turn.
Yes.
Or two. Especially buying two is important if your opponent
mm-hmm.
buys the first one.
Now, you mentioned silver. We should mention that you start a game of Dominion with a pre-constructed deck of 10 cards. It has 7 copper, which are each worth 1 gold or $1. They're worth $1.
Yeah,
and then 3 estates, which are worth 1 victory point, but they don't do anything otherwise. And then in addition to these kingdom cards, which are these action cards that we've gone through, like, you know, Trading Post and Swindler and what have you, these are all action cards that you can buy that are separated into their own decks
And 10 are randomly selected each game.
Right. In addition to buying those, you can buy different treasures. So you can buy more copper, which is worth $1. You can buy silver, which is worth $2.
And costs 3.
And costs 3 to purchase and add into your deck. And then later when you play it, it's worth 2. And then you can buy gold, which costs 6.
It costs 6 and gives you 3.
Right. It costs 6, and then when you play it, you get 3 gold. So, $3. So it's important to, while you're buying these actions that make your deck very efficient, the whole point is that using the card draw that your deck affords you, you draw enough gold and silver to afford the expensive things.
And you get enough buys yes. to be able to manage that.
Right. So that's the general strategy, and yeah, all the cards we mentioned, they follow into that strategy.
I do want to mention a Dominion pro tip.
Mm-hmm.
In Intrigue, there are a couple cards that work really well if with multiples of the same card.
Mm-hmm.
These are mainly...
And what was the term you used for these cards?
So, the community sometimes calls these stacks.
Okay.
Because you just... You turn your deck into a stack of these cards.
Right.
Because they work well with multiples of the same. The main ones are Minion and Nobles. Minion gives you one action, and then you can either gain 2 money or shuffle your hand into your deck and draw 5 cards.
Mm-hmm.
And that also affects other players' hands. And so if you get enough minions, you can play 1, get money, play another, get money, play 1, shuffle your 2 remaining cards from your hand into your deck, draw 5, getting more minions.
So it's some of the most efficient card draw, because right. essentially, it doesn't matter how many cards you have in your hand, you're going to draw 5 new cards.
And the card also gives you money during that right. for itself.
Right.
Then Nobles is, when you play it, it's a victory action card for one thing. So it gives you victory points.
At the end of the game.
At the end of the game. But you can also play it as an action card where it lets you either draw 3 cards or gain 2 actions.
Mm-hmm.
So usually you can play a noble, gain 2 actions, play a noble, draw 3 cards, play a noble, gain 2 actions.
So it's and kind of like...
That lets you draw through your deck really well and give you room to play mm-hmm. other actions.
So we've mentioned Villages already, which is a card from the original game, which just says draw 1 card, gain 2 actions. So it's a card that replaces itself, and it lets you play 2 additional actions, which is a very efficient way of going through your deck. Because if your deck is mostly cards like Village, then you're going to draw a card every time you play a card. You're going to go through all your deck, and you can continue to do so because you're getting an action surplus
yeah.
every time you play a
and
card. That lets you play other cards that don't give you that action surplus in addition to more villages.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an efficient thing that just generates a ton of value for you. So this Nobles card is kind of like a village split in 2. So it takes 2 Nobles, but... The 2 nobles together are a little bit better than a village because they draw you 3 cards rather than 1 card, and they give you 2 actions. So so this one more obviously works as a stack because of that, because they work better when you
and
have 2 of
it's
them.
It's also just points.
Right, and it's also just points. Now, nobles do cost 6 gold. That's one of the more expensive cards available to you. You know, in both this and...
One of the more expensive action cards.
Right, action cards. It's not as expensive as a province, obviously. But as far as action cards go, they don't get much higher than 6 in Intrigue and in the base game. So, you know, it's good to stack them up. In fact, if you can build a deck that can quickly get to 6 gold and start purchasing the nobles, that's probably a very good strategy, because people taking other routes in the game won't get to that 6 gold threshold as quickly as you did, and so you have a much longer time to yourself to just buy up all the nobles, because oftentimes in Dominion, you know, it's a competitive game, you're playing against other people, so you're all buying from the same stacks of cards. So if somebody sees you buying up a lot of cards from one stack, then they're probably going to want to get in on that action. Because that's, you know, probably a good thing to do, a good strategy. They might see it work for you once, and then they'll be like, okay, well, I'm not going to let you have all of them. I'm going to have some of them. So yeah. Something like Nobles costing 6, if you specifically gun for that right from the beginning, then you're probably going to have a little more time to buy those up before other people can horn in your action.
Especially because that might have meant that you bought an extra silver early on, mm-hmm. and that can make a huge difference just with shuffling.
Right.
Generally, when you reveal the set of kingdom cards in the game, you want to look for cards that can trash cards, any card from your deck, or treasures, at least, in victory cards.
Mm-hmm.
Victory cards and treasures are the main things you're going to be trashing. Treasures a bit more so, because there's more coppers than estates.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to look for the villages, which are cards that give you two actions when you play them. And then you usually then want to look for either significant amounts of card draw or significant amounts of, like, gaining extra money from a card while also gaining another effect.
Mm-hmm.
And along with the other economy cards we've talked about, some of the good ones are, like, Bridge, which gives you a buy, a money, and it makes all cards cost one less mm-hmm. for that turn. And Steward's pretty much always good throughout the game. And one of my favorites in this set, personally, Coppersmith,
mm-hmm.
which is not in the new version, but it's in the old one, which just makes your coppers give you one more money.
Right. Coppersmith is an interesting one because they turn your coppers into silvers for a turn.
Yeah.
Golds
if you have two coppersmiths and two actions.
Yeah, yep. That can lead to some interesting deck building strategies that, you know, maybe if somebody else is buying up, you know, all the other stuff that would be more useful for a silver focused deck, then you can sort of change your direction of strategy and focus more on this coppersmith
line of play. If the other player has Masquerade mm-hmm. and is passing along a lot of coppers.
Yeah, then you can benefit from that now. There's two cards that I want to point out that kind of make for an interesting strategy that doesn't focus on the one that we've been talking about up until now, which is this province-focused strategy. That's all about getting to that 8 gold to buy a province and then trying to do that consistently every turn until the game ends and you just have the most provinces and that's why you win. And those two cards that I want to point out are the Duke and the Baron. So to describe what they do, the Duke is a new victory card, and it says that it is worth 1 victory point for each duchy you have. So you start with 0 duchies in your deck. Duchies cost how many gold does a duchy cost?
5.
5 gold for 3 points worth of a card. So a duke is only worth 1 point for each duchy, but if you have, you know, if you have 6 duchies, then a duke is worth just as much as a province technically. Baron, on the other hand, is an action card, and the Baron states that it gives you +1 buy when you play it, which means you can buy an additional card. And then in addition to that, you may discard an estate card from your hand. If you do, you get +4 gold. Otherwise, if you don't have an estate card in your hand, then you gain an estate card. So if you don't have an estate card to discard, then he gives you one into your deck. So these two cards kind of lead someone in a direction where they wouldn't prioritize buying those provinces, and instead they might consider prioritizing duchies for the Duke or estates for the Baron. So what are your thoughts on these strategies?
Well, I would say they're weak.
I think they're definitely weak because they make your deck very, very diluted. Because they force you to have a lot of copies of cards that don't do anything.
Yeah, generally you want as few victory cards in your deck as possible,
mm-hmm.
and just enough that you win. And the problem with Duke and other similar victory cards throughout the game's history that give you X victory points for a condition is that they not only require multiples of themselves, they require multiples of whatever the other card is, with Duke and Duchy being like this weird pair that doesn't really work out.
Right. So, for example, in a province, it is one card, you buy it on one turn with one of your buys, and it's worth 6 points. A Duke and a Duchy are 2 cards that you have to buy individually, and they're both 5 gold each, so that's a 10 gold investment. And for the first one, it's only worth 4 points. And then the second one is worth 5 points. And then, although I guess technically 6 points, because every duchy is then worth 1 additional point for each duke you have. But even still, it takes you 4 buys to have the same amount of value as one card, the province. And it costs you, you know, either 4 turns or 20 gold or however you want to split that up.
Now, there is one exception.
Okay.
In boards that do not... Boards as in setups of the kingdom cards that do not have a lot of either good trashing or they don't have a lot of good, like, actions and card draw.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have a lot of very good, like, junking cards where you give your opponent bad stuff. That is where duchies shine, because it's much harder to reach the 8 gold, the 8 money at all.
Mm-hmm.
But 5 money is much more reasonable. And since the game can also end when you run out of 3 just any other piles in the kingdom, what in these types of very slow slogs is what they call them, players will usually end up getting more duchies than provinces.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what they can afford.
Now, is it an option? Now, say with the Baron. The Baron can acquire a ton of estates very easily, because every time you play a Baron, you either get an estate or you get 4 gold and one buy, which you can then use to buy 2 estates, technically, because an estate only costs 2 gold or $2 to buy. Is it worth it to attempt a strategy, say, with a Baron that attempts to buy, you know, 1 to 3 estates as quickly as it can and then buy out 3 kingdom piles as quickly as it can?
There's definitely strategies that do rely on piling out super quickly,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think the major ones are in the base set or Intrigue.
Okay.
They're later cards.
Later expansions to really fully develop this alternative win condition strategy, where instead of attempting for provinces on a very fast, efficient board, or getting duchies on these slog boards, as you call them, there's not really any other direction to go strategy-wise that can hold a candle to the efficiency and the power that these kinds of strategies will get you.
And while we're on the subject, we talked about 2 of the 3 main, like, pillars of deck archetypes in Dominion.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about engines and we talked about slogs.
Mm-hmm.
There's also big money, which is for buying the best treasure cards soon, just getting good money generation, and then a few card draw and filtering effects to just get over that 8 money gap every turn.
So then...
And this has a new card that's really good called Courtyard.
Okay.
It costs 2 money, so which is pretty cheap, and it is +3 cards, so you draw 3 cards, and then put a card from your hand on top of your deck. So... It does not give you an action.
Right.
But if you were to say... By, you know, if you had like 2 silvers in your deck in this, then this is really good to be able to get to 6 gold in that next shuffle phase.
Mm-hmm.
And then that time, if you get to the 6 money, you can buy a gold, and it just helps you boost through your deck really quickly to get the gold you need and the money you need.
So this kind of strategy doesn't rely on the village's ability to give you multiple actions, play a bunch of different action cards that essentially just go through your whole deck until you have assembled a hand that can buy a province.
Right.
Instead, this card, it just plays 1 action that draws you a lot of cards, and that will hopefully draw you a number of silvers and gold that will allow you to buy something the cards you have
really
straight up.
Really, it's because money is the most... Treasure cards are the most efficient money,
mm-hmm.
because you can play as many of them in your hand as you want every turn.
Right, there's no limit on how many treasures you can play in a turn.
So, theoretically, if a courtyard draws you 3 treasures and you put, like, a estate on top of your deck,
mm-hmm.
that's +3 actions.
Right. You could also kind of consider it like this, where... a courtyard is very good to stack up, like you mentioned with what did you mention it for?
The minion and noble.
Right, the minion and the noble. So a courtyard can also stack pretty well, theoretically, because you can imagine if you play a courtyard, you draw 3 treasures or you draw 2 treasures in a courtyard, you just put the courtyard on top of your deck, and now you have a courtyard for next turn that will draw into more treasures and stuff.
Honestly, we mentioned how nobles cost 6, and that's kind of a hard threshold to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Courtyard is a really good way to get to that point, because nobles gives you actions you can use with courtyard
mm-hmm.
to even further boost courtyard's potential.
Right, and Courtyard only costs 2. It's a very cheap card. So that's the basics of strategy in Dominion and Dominion Intrigue. and we talked about the art types, slogs, big money, and engines. So let's get into the design. And actually, before we start talking about the specifics of Dominion Intrigue's design, let's talk about expansions in general.
Right. So we each had our own little brainstorming session about this.
Yeah, we wanted to come up with some ideas of what we're looking for in an expansion. Like, what makes a good expansion to a game?
Not necessarily, like, end-all, be-all criteria, but, like, these are generally good things to notice or look at or consider.
And not every expansion is going to hit on all of the points that we mentioned here that we like to see in expansions in games. And because, you know, expansions can obviously vary in size. There's some expansions that only add, you know, just a few extra parts to the game to make it a little more varied and interesting between gameplays. Other expansions like this one could be an entirely new game on their own.
Or there's the inverse, where there's some games that are very small expansion-wise but have huge implications.
Sure. Like games that add bonus rules to a game, or bonus
Hive,
game
which
modes.
Just adds new tile character
although
classes.
I think you know, proportionally, Hive expansions are kind of,
if you consider it like a big percentage.
So let's talk about what we like to see in an expansion and what we like to observe in an expansion. So do you want to go first?
Sure.
Okay. I came up with
a neat little acronym for this.
Okay. I'm interested to hear this.
Balance, exploration, addition, and diversity, BEAD. So balance is, of course, balance fixes. Any major broken mechanics or playstyles or whatever in the base set, I think expansions should try to make them less broken or less overpowering. Because, I mean, that's the first thing you should at least look at, is were there any huge mistakes that need to be helped?
Right. Obviously, you know, talking about game design, we talked about this in our episode last week, not the Good Stuffs episode, but the how to design a game, that, you know, a game is never really ever finished.
It's never perfect.
It's never perfect. So expansions do give you an opportunity to refine the parts of the original game that you weren't able to refine, or that you didn't manage to fix by the, you know, original printing of the first game. So this is almost like your opportunity to do a version 2.0, but it uses new things rather than, you know, directly
rather
replacing.
Than errata or replacing.
Sure. Yeah.
And then exploration is exploring the existing themes or mechanics in new ways. This is usually, like, sort of design space is what some designers will call it, where there's mechanics or there's, like, cards or abilities that work within the current rules without adding new rules, but they just weren't put in because of time or cost restraints or size constraints. And then theme-wise, I mean, there's a lot of games where just it adds another part of the world or another concept to it. Then addition is additional themes or mechanics that fit with the current ones. It doesn't completely overhaul all the mechanics or anything. It is an extension of the game, but it adds significant new stuff. And then diversity is additions that allow you to play the game in new ways, or previously really weak ways or underrepresented ways, new strategies.
Okay. So what I came up with is a little similar to yours. I don't have a fun
acronym
for it. I just have a couple bullet points. So the first bullet point is something that you mentioned, that it should. I like to see expansions that fix the issues of the base game, that attempt to mend the issues using new parts. I like to see expansions that explore new design territory. So that's kind of like one of the additions that you mentioned, and also the expanding that you mentioned. It's like what did the original game not do at all that this game could try out? I like that when expansions have a unique flavor identity to them, that the expansion doesn't just feel like more pieces that could have been in the base game, that the expansion is in itself, it has an identity to it. So you're not just buying, you know, the second edition of the original game. You're buying the original game, but it's this style. Mm-hmm. And now it adds like sort of an interesting flavor feel to it. I think that expansion should work in seamlessly with the old game if they are truly an expansion and not like a new version of the game. I think in a later game we'll discuss, a later expansion we'll discuss, it's not actually really an expansion because it doesn't work so seamlessly into the original game. This one obviously does work very seamlessly, and it's meant to be blended with the original game. And then I think that the expansion should not... Oh, and just to talk a little bit about the seamlessly, a good expansion I don't think should be entirely parasitic, which we've mentioned parasitic games and parasitic design before. That is, it's a design that only cares about itself and other parts of the game can't interact with it. And then the expansion shouldn't trump the old game in power level. It should attempt the same level of power. You shouldn't buy an expansion and get better cards.
Yeah, this is the term power creep
that
people love to use.
Yes.
And designers love to fear.
Yes, power creep. Meaning the cards should do something new. It's okay if some of the cards do something a little bit better than a card that already exists. But, you know, as a whole, the expansion shouldn't be stronger than the original set.
Because then it is just the new version of the game.
Exactly. And you know, what's the point then? You know, it's more interesting to see an expansion that plays at the same power level so that there's no there's no issue there. It's just, you know, you don't only play with the expansion cards now because they're just better, and you'd just lose if you tried to play with the old cards. So I think on the points that we've mentioned, this game touches on a lot of them in a good way. One thing that I want to bring up first that we've mentioned kind of in passing about a couple of these cards is that this game or this expansion introduces cards that have multiple types to them. So we've mentioned the Nobles. They are an action and a victory card. So this is the new design space. This is the addition to the game, something that the game did not have before. And I think it's really cool that they do that. I mean, it's a really basic idea to say like this action is worth points at the end of the game, but they do that. They also have a card called Harem, which is both a treasure and a victory card. So it's worth 2 gold and it's worth 2 points at the end of the game.
And it's also interesting that later in the game's life, he adds action treasures.
Mm-hmm.
But this set only has cards that have one half that cares about the end game and one half that cares about during the game.
Right. So I
think that's a good example of not only exploring new space with the existing rules, but doing so in a comfortable way that makes sense.
And something that this also kind of helps to do is, like, for example, on the Nobles with their effect. And we talked about how good the Nobles are, because if you buy multiples of them, they essentially act as better villages. But they cost 6 gold. And I think if the Nobles hadn't been this split card that gives you 2 victory points at the end of the game in addition to doing their action, they would cost less for their original effect.
It would seem really lackluster, too.
It would probably cost 3 or 4 gold to buy a card like Nobles. But instead it costs 6, and now they're also worth points. So not only does it kind of add that cost diversity to the game, but it also kind of makes it exciting.
Gives it oomph.
It gives it a little oomph, and it kind of makes that strategy a little more interesting. And the Harem card, which is, it's a silver because it's worth $2, and it's also worth 2 points. That's also a 6-cost card in this game. So it costs 1 more than a gold, but it's worth those 2 points at the end of the game.
Actually, it costs the same as a gold, but it gives you one less money.
That's right, the same as a gold. A gold costs 6.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the other main mechanical function that is added in this expansion is choices and multiple options.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fair amount of cards that just say, like, choose 1 or choose 2. So, like, Pawn, which has choose 2, and then it has 4 different effects that are pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
This is another example of design space where, like, for the most part, a lot of the existing cards in the base set were pretty linear, pretty standard, just like you do what it says and that's it.
Yep.
And that was actually a big one of the big criticisms of the game was that there wasn't a whole lot of decision making. People felt once you drew your hand, it was just what you buy.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's, you know, there's differences in that, but it is a criticism that is addressed because so many cards in this let you make decisions when you play them.
Right.
Or like Ironworks, which there is a card like that in the base set where you gain a card costing up to 4, but Ironworks gives you additional bonuses depending on what type of card you got, such as getting an action card from it gives you another action.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a victory card gives you lets you draw a card. And I just think that's really cool because it's not just what card do you want to get, it's what card do you want to get knowing there are consequences during the same turn.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that like the most important decision you make in a game of Dominion with the base game is just what card do you buy. And so, you know, when you play a card, you're not really making an important decision. The only decision you really make when it comes to playing cards is the order that you play them in. And you typically will only play them in the order that makes sense. So you'll play the cards that give you more actions first and then the other cards later. This game does, it points out that you can do more in that point. I like that Ironworks gives more context, at least to the decision of buying. It makes it a little more interesting. With the Ironworks card, you would consider buying a card that you wouldn't have considered before just so that you can get that extra effect from the Ironworks that you want.
In another example of how Dominion Intrigue addresses other criticisms about the base set, a lot of people thought that the base set was very uninteractive player-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the most interaction you did was either attacks that had very basic implementation
like
or whatever.
Like forcing people to discard cards.
Yeah. Or there was just buying cards so that other people couldn't buy them. Dominion Intrigue has a lot of attack cards that either are based around what the opponent has in their hand or deck. We mm-hmm. mentioned Masquerade.
Pardon. It's the 4th of July and people are lighting fireworks outside our house.
We mentioned Masquerade and Swindler. There's also Tribute, which makes the opponent reveal 2 cards from the top of their deck.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's cards like Torturer, which part of the attack is the opponent having to make a decision between discarding cards or gaining a curse.
Mm-hmm.
So even the opponent has to make decisions during your turn, and that adds a level of attention and interaction that people thought was missing at first.
You're right. One thing design-wise that's kind of interesting about this game is that the Masquerade card is not an attack. An attack card is a special kind of subtype of card that affects other players, and there are cards in the game that allow you to that are called reactions that allow you to prevent yourself from being affected by an attack. There is the moat in the base game. Other cards give you ways to react to attacks so that they are less impactful on you. So, for example, there's an attack that forces you to discard a card. In Intrigue, there's a reaction that allows you to draw cards before that happens. So it at least softens the effect
for
you.
Well, it's draw 2, then put 2 on back on top of your deck. It lets you filter.
Either way, it lets you filter. It gives you a little bit of a chance to stay afloat after an attack. But anyways, there's these defensive maneuvers for these attack cards. But with Masquerade, it's not an attack, so people can't react to it. Now, it makes sense that it wouldn't be an attack, because if somebody were to make themselves exempt from the effect, then it wouldn't make any sense for everyone to pass a card to their left. And then what happens with the person that's not interacting with that? Does that mean you skip over them with a passive card? Does that mean you pass them a card, but they don't pass somebody else their card? You know, it's hard mm-hmm. to tell, so it makes sense that they would do that, but it's also interesting that they made an attack that is not technically an attack. Mm-hmm. And so sort of it forces people to interact with each other. So I don't know. That's an interesting thing about the game. So we talked about that they've explored new design territory. Another part of design territory that they've explored is this card types matters. So we've already mentioned it with the Ironworks card, which, you know, if the card you acquire is an action, do this. If it's a treasure, do that. This has an interesting combination with the card Great Hall, which is both an action and a victory card. So you would get both effects from the Great Hall if you acquired it with the Ironworks. And there's other cards that involve what type a card is,
right,
that change what its effect does.
We mentioned Tribute, which does different things based on what your opponents have on their deck.
Mm-hmm.
There's Shantytown, which lets you draw two cards if you have no actions in hand. There's a pretty fair amount. There's Scout, which reveals the top four cards of your library, your deck, I'm using magic terms,
mm-hmm.
and you put the victory cards you reveal into your hand and the rest go back on top.
Right.
So that helps you filter out bad victory cards, mm-hmm. or at least useless victory cards.
But at least with the addition of Great Hall, yeah. sometimes those victory cards can actually be very good to
right.
add into your hand. I think this is a really good design space to explore, because it very obviously works well with the cards in the base set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it cares about a very fundamental aspect of the game, that, you know, all cards have the ability to affect.
You know what's cool is the additional victory card that can be put in the kingdom in the base set costs 4, so it can get purchased by Ironworks as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a fun example of how it ties back together.
Right.
And I think this set has a lot more Johnny cards than the base set, where they're cards that invite the player to learn about the game and solve the puzzle of making them work,
mm-hmm.
like Coppersmith and Bridge, which makes all cards cost 1 less to buy. It's like, if you play enough bridges, you could buy a province for free,
mm-hmm.
which is a strategy some people have done. There's also Wishing Well, where you play it, you draw a card and get an action, then you name a card, and you reveal the top card of your deck, and if you named the card correctly, you put it into your hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a card that cares about you, like, keeping track of what you add to your deck. I think that's good for a couple reasons of balance-wise. One, that in the first Dominion set, there wasn't much to, like, worry about. Once you buy a card, it's in your deck, you'll play it in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Wishing Well kind of makes you be conscious of that. And it makes you conscious about, like, you know, getting multiples of good cards, and it invites players, it sort of encourages players to think towards that more linear, engineered, you know, efficient strategy.
Mm-hmm. This is also kind of just one of those cards. Yeah, I like that this is one of those cards where it doesn't obviously point out that you should care about something like knowing what cards are in your deck. You know, do you really have to care about them when all you have to care about is the cards that are in your hand or something like that?
It's a guidepost card.
Yeah, it's a guidepost card. It shines a spotlight on that thing, and then it turns you into a better player because you care about it now. So it explores new design territory. It integrates well with the game. It doesn't really trump the old game. I mean, really, the old game has Village, and how are you going to trump that?
The old game has a lot of, like, you know, distilled powerful cards. Village, Laboratory, Festival, Market.
Did you say Chapel was a good one?
Oh, Chapel's the best card in the game.
Exactly. So yeah, this game doesn't trump those,
mm-hmm.
But instead it explores these new design territories, and those territories can be intermixed with those old good cards, and this set still has some good cards of its own.
Right. I mean, there's the two Nobles and Minion that we keep going back to.
Mm-hmm.
I do actually think those were included to mix better with the base set, because if you think about the base set, there's like 3 good cards that give you multiple actions. And I think, well, Minion doesn't give you more than 1 action, but it's still a reasonable enough engine card. I think the designer was worried about there being not enough, like, engine cards, so that when you randomize between the two sets of cards, it would get too slow.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you talk about integrating well with the original game, you also have to think of, like, what is the spread of options, of things that each of the cards do.
The spread of trashing and villages and
exactly.
junking.
And so when you start mixing in these new cards randomly, you have to make sure that the spread remains somewhat constant. And if you're changing the spread, you have to make sure that you're changing it for a good reason, because you're trying to promote different kinds of strategies, like the slogs or what have you. So
mm-hmm.
So if this game had a lower density of these village cards, of these engine cards, then it would have to be trying to put a focus on that kind of slog strategy and really explore that. But it doesn't. This game does well to put a little bit of everything in it so that when it starts to mix together, it still plays like Dominion. It's not diluting the old strategies with these weird new ways of playing. It keeps it all together. Though, pretty consistently.
I do think another good thing this does is it adds new economic strategies. Previously, pretty much the most you would do is get some gold, get some silver, get some buys, and then buy provinces.
Mm-hmm.
But this adds, you know, coppersmith and bridge, and even courtyard helps, where it doesn't necessarily encourage players to do it differently, but it gives players an option to have a different economic strategy.
Right.
So it does another way of adding new things that delineate the base game.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about a number of ways that this game fixes the issues mm-hmm. of the base game. But one of the things, and it was kind of the point that I brought up towards the end of our strategy discussion, was the focus with Duke and with Baron. So obviously what they were trying to do was they were trying to incorporate new strategies to the game that involved not focusing on buying provinces to win. And we talked a little bit about how buying duchies can be a strategy depending on the board or depending on how you want to finish the game quickly and you want to just buy the victory points a little quicker. But Duke and Baron don't do anything to really help that. Like, yeah. you wouldn't really buy Dukes in a game where you are slogging for duchies and then ending the game without really getting to the provinces. The Duke wouldn't help very
yeah,
well.
This is worth noting that this was the earliest expansion of Dominion, so sure. He didn't still quite figure out the exact, like, you know, numbers and the exact effects that
were
really good.
Yeah, the exact balancing of it.
There wasn't as much of a competitive community, so...
Sure, so, I mean,
but that's to be expected. It's the first expansion. It's still a new concept.
But, and maybe, you know, the people playtesting this game weren't so keen on the whole engines and slogs and what have you in the game, so they weren't able to really test the limits of somebody with a Duke strategy going up against somebody who is just going to build an engine and buy provinces.
Right.
You know, but that said, I guess the only place where this set loses marks for me as far as being a good expansion is that these new avenues for victory are not as successful as they could be.
I do gotta say something about the theme.
Yeah.
You talked about each expansion's having like their own unique idea or theme.
Yes.
This is mostly represented in Dominion Intrigue. With the theme of Intrigue, there's a lot more cards that represent like the evil Undercity side of the kingdom.
Yeah, Shifty.
Yeah, the Shifty. There's Shantytown,
yeah.
There's Masquerade, you mm-hmm. know, Saboteur, Pawn,
Torturer,
Tribute. Trading Post has like a thief in the foreground looking at the Trading
yeah.
Post.
Swindler, Secret
oh, yeah,
Chamber. And even like all the images of nobles, like the Baron or the nobles.
It's just straight up conspirator.
Right, exactly. But even like the Baron and the nobles, they look shifty. Like the artwork has people whispering to each other in it. Like in the background of the Baron card, there's two people whispering to one another. In the nobles, there's somebody whispering to the noble. And then in the background, there's maybe another noble trying to listen in on their conversation. So yeah, this expansion has a theme to it.
It's not fully represented.
Right.
There's still like Courtyard and Wishing Well, which are kind of equally like realistic and whimsical to the base set.
Right. The Duke looks kind of normal.
Mm-hmm.
Ironworks. I mean, yeah, even still, it's sort of a game. It's this game about building a town. And so there's still going to be these architectural, these structural
aspects.
Right.
It's not a complete tone shift.
Sure. But it does kind of have sort of an identity to itself. It also has a lot of stuff that involves messing with your opponent's cards, because you mentioned the the interaction has a greater focus in this expansion. And that's very fitting for a game called Intrigue, because it's all about gaining information on your opponent's cards and subtly manipulating them from the shadows. Sabotaging them. Exactly. So so this game does a little bit of that. So it does kind of well to have its own unique flavor and identity that makes it an expansion, you know, of its own merit. I don't know. Just yeah. it has its own kind of name to it. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about regarding Dominion Intrigue?
Not particularly. I think it's interesting that there's not quite as many of the like alternate win conditions in this as as there are that appear later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Or later in the in more expansions.
I think
later
in our
on.
First Good Stuffs episode, we mentioned an expansion, Dominion Nocturne. And that one had,
Nocturne is really crazy.
It's really crazy. It's a little parasitic compared to this one because they add a new night cards that only really work with other night cards. I mean, they do things, but you know, they don't,
but there's not as many night cards matters in that.
There's a few, I guess, either way.
But, I mean, there's just more variations as it goes on. There's mm-hmm. better slog cards. Like, the next expansion, Seaside, adds one of the better ones, which is, I think, Sea Hag.
Mm-hmm. So, maybe at this point, we go into the point of the episode where we give recommendations for other games like this. We could talk about the other expansions for the game and just go over them briefly. So, yeah, Sea Hag from what is Seaside. The name of it? Seaside expansion for
Dominion.
I think
my favorite expansion for Dominion is Dark Ages. Mm-hmm. It has a really good mix of theme and new things, as well as just cool interactions. It has a bigger focus on trashing, which I think is welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a good one to get if you're familiar enough with the game, but you want some more interesting stuff.
I really like trashing in Dominion and in other deck building games, because that's how you really make a really interesting deck. Like, even, like, every strategy is better with trashing. Even, like, the really weird ones, you know, that focus on really odd ways of interacting with the game. You know, it's all made more interesting with trashing, so that's very cool.
I also really like Adventures, which has, like, a fantasy theme with more fantastical and, like, adventurous D&D type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that one has some really crazy advanced mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like...
Alchemy, isn't there?
I don't like Alchemy.
You don't like Alchemy?
It's my least favorite.
That one has sort of a focus on the treasure, and that has a lot of, like, treasure
cards. Well, there's Prosperity.
Prosperity,
which
that's
is
right.
About big treasure, big points.
Right.
That one's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because it lets you score huge amounts of points with, like, goons.
So, top three expansions for Dominion, what would you say?
I would say Adventures, Dark Ages, Prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
Seaside's good when you want to, you know, get more from just the base set. I mean, I do actually like Guilds a lot, mainly because they add coin token cards, which give you, like, a bank of coins that you can carry between turns.
As you can see, folks, there's a lot of expansions for this game.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot.
And you can see that expansions are a very big part of board gaming. You know, you make a game, and you can play through it a number of times, and it's really great how you can have multiple experiences in really great games, you know, every time you play it. But, of course, there always comes to the point where you want to get something more out of your game, and that's where expansions come in.
Yeah.
And this was certainly a good one, and you've mentioned some other good ones that people can check out if they're interested in playing more and more Dominion. And there's also an app that you can get on your phone that rather than having to use, because the game comes with these blue back cards that you shuffle together, and that's how you determine what the board is for every game. There's an app on your phone that's free where you can put in the expansions that you own for Dominion, and it will randomize and spit out a board for you.
Yeah, it's called Randominion.
Randominion. free buzz marketing for Randominion right there. So that's our episode on Dominion Intrigue, the expansion for Dominion.
Yep.
Thank you for listening, folks. If you would like, you can follow us on social media at BG Bros Cast. You can also go to our website at bgbcast.com, where we post all our episodes and put tags on them so you can look for the game that you're interested in learning about. That's where you can look through our tags for the Dominion tag, and that'll take you right to Dominion. Although it's going to be pretty easy to find because it's episode 2 of our whole podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So check that out. Let us know what you think. Give us, comments or whatever on social media.
Give us reviews on your
podcast app. We're very interested to hear what you guys think. We hit sort of a milestone recently.
We hit 5K total listens.
Yeah. So thank you very much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to just know that people, want to hear us talk about game design.
Sure.
They enjoy it.
Certainly, we do this more for the love of it. We just like talking about games.
That's definitely true. We just love games and game design.
But it's very endearing to find out that all you folks like to hear about it too, and you like to hear what we have to say. So thank you for listening.
Yeah.
We
also have a merch, by the way.
Yeah, while we're showering you with thanks, we would love for you to check out our merch. We have t-shirts. You can go to entertainthegeeky.com/gear. And that is where you can find our Board Game Bros t-shirts that have our Board Game Bros logo on it, which, if I do say so myself, I think is pretty cool.
Well, yeah. I mean, I also say so.
Yeah.
So there's a second opinion.
If we do say so ourselves. It's pretty cool. And while you're there at entertainthegeeky.com, you can check out all the other podcasts that our friends Chris and Roger and Jason put on every week for your enjoyment. And stay tuned for information regarding our Kickstarter. We said it'd be in June, but here it is in July, and unfortunately it has not come around yet, but we are working hard to get that out to you so that you guys can experience our very first game, which is
our very second game,
if you count our one-page role-playing game Rolls Truck 7 Main, perfect for the merry month of July. The game that we are kickstarting along with our board game company is the game Conniving Cooks,
a 2-6 player bluffing and deduction card game in which players play as cooks at a fancy restaurant trying to get each other fired while making sure the guests get their food ready and on time.
Mm-hmm. So check out that. Stay, keep your ears open for information regarding that, on that website and in all of our communications. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Look forward to the next episode this month where we'll talk about another expansion of a game that we've already discussed on this podcast.
Yep.
Take it easy.
See ya.